So we were. So where were we? So Shlomo, despite having sinned, basically dies with peace in the people. There's a beginning of upsets, but nothing serious. Rechava takes over, and the people criticize him for the high taxes of Shlomo. They request that he should. They request for him to lower the taxes. He takes advice both from the young. I think we only got through halfway through the back. He takes requests from the old people and from the young people. The old people say, give in to them. The young people said, no, be worse to them. And that didn't work very well. They rebelled. Yeravam becomes king. He tries to, calm them down, sends his tax collector. They kill the tax collector. That doesn't work out very well. Brilliant move. And then he gets an army together, and Hashem says, don't do it. This was from me. And Rechavam, to his credit, stops. Okay, so we were, I think, Perek Yudbet Pasuk Chafei, which is halfway through that story. Vayivin Yeravam et Shechem Bahar Ephraim Veshev
Bab. Who took over?
So Rechavam takes over his kingdom. Rechavam takes over the kingdom of Shlomo, so this is a bit complicated. He takes over. The Navi had said that he would get one Shevet. In the end, he gets at least two, right? Yehuda and Binyamin, and maybe some of Shimon, because Shimon's in his portion. But he gets whatever it is, Yehuda and Binyamin, maybe some Shimon, some late Levim, mostly Levim Kohanim, because they're with the Beis HaMikdash. And then Yeravam takes over the Malchut Yehuda. Malchut Yisrael. And that's the beginning of the Pilug HaMelecha, the two kingdoms. But then Yeravam decides that this isn't good as such. It seems like the original plan of God was that the Jews would split into two kingdoms, but they would remain some sort of confederacy with interaction between them, and therefore the Beit HaMikdash could potentially still be part or the center of religious life for even Malchut Yisrael under Yeravam. But Yeravam is afraid that if he allows, or if the people go to Yerushalayim, then, they're going to realize, maybe we should go back to Yehuda, and he's going to lose his power, so he doesn't want to do that. So that's where we pick up in Yudbet Chafei. So what Yeravam...
I think it's surprising God picks him. And not even two sentences into it, he makes the wrong decisions. He was picked by the Navi.
Yeah. Yeah, and it makes bad decisions. Really
right.
Bad.
Right, so he was handpicked by God.
Yeah, yeah. And Shaul also, his big mistakes within 2 years,
Right.
Yeah. And David, we love, and still, he makes some big mistakes along the way also. So what Yeravam did is he said as follows, right? So this is Pasuk Chafei. So he says, "Vayivin Yeravam Shechem Bahar Ephraim, Vayishev Bav, Vayitzi Misham, Vayivin Penuel." So he goes and he fortifies Penuel, fine. "Vayomer Yeravam Vilibav, Atata Shuv Mamachal Beit David, Im Yalam Hazel, Lasut Vachem Veid Adonai B'Yerushalayim, Vishav Lev HaMazel Adonai Hem, Rechava Melch Yudah, Ve'arguni Veshavu Rechava Melch Yudah." I think we actually did read this, but it's worth reading again to get the background. And he said, if people go back to bring Karbonot in Yerushalayim, so then they're going to go back to Rechavam, they're going to kill me. Because they're going to realize, they're going to decide I'm not a legitimate king, and therefore I was a rebel, and they'll kill me. Vayivatz Amelch Vayashnei Glezahav Vayomra Lehem Rav La Lachem Me'alot Yerushalayim Hinei Elohecha Yisrael Asher Alucha Meretz Mitzrayim. So instead, he makes two agalim, and he says Ela Elohecha Yisrael. Right, these are your gods, and obviously the Navi is trying to connect it to the other egel, where they said the same thing Ela Elohecha Yisrael Asher Alucha Meretz Mitzrayim. That's a quote from the egel Hazahav, and he makes two agalim. One at the northern part of his kingdom, one at the southern part of his kingdom. This way, it would always be closer for the people in his country, in his territory, to worship at the Agalim than to go to Yerushalayim. Now, the Mepharshim divide whether this is actual Avodah Zarah or not, the same way they do by the Egel Hazav. Right? Was it Avodah Zarah or not? Some even suggest that what he was trying to do was recreate the Kruvim. And the Kruvim... the Shekhinah is Shoreh between the Kruvim. So what he did was he put two sort of golden statues, one in the north, one in the south, to imply that the Shekhinah is among him, is between the two Kruvim on his northern and southern border. So it's not clear if it's Avodah Zarah or it's worship to God. It eventually becomes Avodah Zarah. But it's not clear that this was meant to be Avodah Zarah, and there's evidence that it's not, because even some of the more righteous kings don't get rid of the Agalim if it was pure Avodah Zarah, you know, as opposed to some sort of intermediary or some symbol of God. The righteous kings would have presumably gotten rid of it. Or it could be Avodah Zarah, it's not totally clear. He puts one in the north, one in the south of his portion. And this became the sin, and they went and they worshipped Vayas at Beit Bamot, Vayas Kohanim, and he makes priests who are not from the Levium, because the Levium were committed to Yerushalayim. That was a Freudian slip. Right, he makes Sukkot essentially, but not in the seventh month, but in the eighth month, which either means he does it a month late or he makes a leap year, right? Thereby, so you know, he can say, "Oh, it's Sukkot because it's the seventh month, but it's really the eighth month already." If his leap year is illegitimate. So he makes this festival on the 15th of the 8th month as some sort of sukkis, as an imitation of what's going on in Yehuda. And he brings Karbanot. And he brings Karbanot on this holiday that he'd made up of his own mind. Okay, now Perek Yud Gimel, like I said, is probably the most talked about Perek in all of Melachim, and it is weird. So we'll read it, but then we'll see. It is almost impossible to understand what's going on, and we can understand it in 100 different ways. So we're going to try to get it. So, Vinei Yish Elohim Bam Yehuda B'Dvar Adonai El Beit El V'Ravam Omeid Al Mizbeach Laktir. So as Yeravam is going up to sacrifice on his mizbeach. So a man of God, unnamed, Chazal say it's Ido, but he comes as Yeravam is standing there, bringing a karban. Vayikral mizbeach b'dvar Adonai, vayomer mizbeach mizbeach, komer Adonai Elohim, hine vin nolad levet David, Yoshiyahu shmo, v'zavach alecha et konei abamot hamikatrim alecha v'atzmor adam yisrfu alecha. And he talks to the mizbeach, and he ignores everybody, he talks to the mizbeach and he said, there will be a son born to David, named Yoshiyahu. Now, Yoshiyahu is, if you have a list of kings, wait, I have to count how many kings this is, right? Is not soon, right? It is, I'll tell you how many generations he is. Malcha Yuda. Right, so he really talks to the Mizbeach itself, right? And he says, one day there will be this king named Yoshio, and he is going to slaughter the priests of these idolatrous priests on the Mizbeach. That's what he says. Okay, let me see how many there are. Okay, so we have where's the list? Yeah. Here we go. Okay. So, how many generations are you talking about? So, it's Shlomo. So, Shlomo's dead. So, Rechavam, Aviah, Asa, Yehoshaphat, Yehoram, Achaziah, Ataliah, Yehoash, Amatziah, Uziyahu, Yotam, Achaz, Chizkiyahu, Menashe, Amon, Yoshiyahu. 16 kings later. All right. So he says, one day there will be a king named Yoshiyahu, and he will kill the Kohanim, and he will sacrifice all of their bones on this Mizbeach. Right? So no one knows what's going on. Right? He comes and talks about Yoshiyahu, and none of them are going to see this in their lifetime at all. Right? 16 generations from now. Vinatan bayomahu mofet lemor, zel mofet asher diber adonai yinem Mizbeach nikra v'nishbach hadesh nashar alav. And he said, this will be the sign. The Mizbeach will break, and the ashes will be spilled. Let me prove to you that you're wrong. So you read this at first, and you're like, oh, the guy is coming to disprove Yeravam. But who is being convinced, right? He is saying, one day in, right, 16 kings from now, you will all pay the price. And I'll prove it to you, because then the Mizbeach will be broken. Okay. Vayhi cheshmo ha-melech edvar isha Elohim asher karal Mizbeach b'veit el, vayishlach Yeravam et yadom el Mizbeach lemor, tifsuhu v'tivash yado asher shalach alav v'lo yachol lashiva elav. And the king heard what he said, and he stretched out his arm to seize him, and his arm dried out. It either became rigid, right, or withered, or something, but his arm ceased to function. Bamizbeach nikra. Sorry, the mizbeach is going to break now. The bones are going to happen later. Bamizbeach nikra. And the symbol happened. The mizbeach breaks, and the ashes spill. Vayana melech, vayomer elishalim, chal na el pnei Adonai elohecha, vitpalel ba'adi, vatashov yadi elai, vachal ishalim et pnei Adonai, vatashov yad melech elav di kvarishana. And he said, okay, please daven for my hand. He davened for his hand, and his hand came back. So at this point, if it was me, I would have given up, right? The Mizbeach magically breaks, my arm has, you know, withered up, and then he come back to life. Instead, says, come home, come to my house, and have some food, and I'll give you a present. I don't care what you give me. Food, drink, doesn't matter. Nothing you could give me will ever make me come with you. God told me, don't eat, don't drink, and don't go back the way you came. Then he goes on a different path back to Yerushalayim. We have to sort of read this story, and then we may have to continue it next week, but at least highlight the problems in the story and get some of the interpretations here. And there was an elderly Navi who lived in Beit El, and his son told him what happened. And we don't know a false Navi, a true Navi, right? A guy named, who was it called a Navi? So he said, which way did he go? And he pointed which way he went. So he said, please get my donkey ready. They did, and he rode it. And he found him sitting under a tree. And he said, are you the man of God who came from Yehuda? And he said, yeah, that's me. Come have dinner at my house. I can't. I'm not allowed to eat, drink here. I'm just not allowed to. Because God said, I can't eat here, I can't drink water here, and I'm not allowed to go back on the path that I came. And he said, I'm also a Navi like you. So he lied to him, and he said, an angel came and told me to bring you back and to invite you for dinner. And just like that, he goes back and he has dinner, and he follows the false prophet, or this false prophecy, and he goes home and has dinner. And then, while they're having dinner, the word of God comes to the Navi, who brought him back. Now that, it's not clear who that Navi is, it's not clear which Navi it is, we don't know. Right? It could be either, it's probably the second Navi, but it could be the first. And
to the fake Navi.
Or real Navi, we don't know whether he's real or fake yet, but the one who lied, it's probably the second one. Some of Farshim think it's the first, but it's probably the second. Vayikra Elisha lehem asher bam Yehuda lemor. Komar Adonai yan ki marita. Pi Adonai velo shamarta mitzvah asher tzivcha Adonai lecha. Since, and he said to the Isha Elohim, right, since you rebelled against God and you didn't keep the commandment I gave you, vatashav tocha lechem vateshmayim b'makom asher diber yilecha lo tocha lechem lo teshmayim lo tavo nivlatcha al kever otecha. Because you did that, you ate, you won't be buried, your body won't reach your father's grave. So, okay. He said, you're going to die and not be buried in your father's grave. Okay. So that's bad, but we don't know when that's going to happen. Turns out, it happens on his way home. So, after that, after he eats and drinks, he gets his donkey ready, Right, this time the guy gets the donkey ready for him, the second guy for the first one. Vayelach v'yimseu aryeh baderech v'miteu. V'tinev latom mushlechet baderech v'chamor omeid etzla v'aryeh omeid etzal nevela. And a lion finds him and tears him apart on his way home and leaves the donkey alive and stands guard over the body. And some people came by and they see the lion there and they went and they tell, you know, this is all the talk of the town. There's a guy, you know, a body there lying with a lion standing guard, and they go back and they talk about it in the city. And the Navi, second Navi now, says, oh, that must be the man of God, because God said he was going to kill him, and he did. And again, he tells his sons, get my donkey ready. And he goes and he finds the dead body, and the lion, and the donkey, and the donkey hadn't been eaten by the lion. And he takes his body back and he buries him and he eulogizes him. And he buries him and he says, oh, my brother. After it's his fault. And he said, when I die, bury me in his grave. Why? Because everything that he said will happen, you know, 16 generations from now, will happen, and I want my bones to be saved with him. And after this, Yeravam didn't do tshuva. And he kept on appointing priests, anyone who wanted. And this was the sin of Yeravam and their annihilation from the face of the earth. So this is the story that nobody knows what to do with, because it is one of the weirdest stories in Tanakh. You know, and everyone looks at the story and says, what happened? What exactly did the... I mean, I get it. The guy did something wrong. He ate a meal when he wasn't supposed to eat a meal. He went, turned backwards, and he wasn't supposed to turn backwards. But why? First, right, everyone says, okay, why was he killed? Why is the punishment death? Was the second Navi real, fake? Was he lying? Why doesn't he get punished? Right? Not only does he not get punished, but his bones get saved, because you find out many prakim later when it actually happens, and Yoshio comes in the scene, so he does burn the bones of the Nevi Abaal on the Mizbeach, and he saves the bones of the two Nevi'im. So he actually gets saved. So everyone said, what? He was the Navi who lied to the Ish Elohim. He gets saved. He gets off scot-free. Not only does he get off scot-free, but his bones get saved. And then the real Navi, who all he did was he came back and had dinner when he wasn't supposed to, gets killed by the lion and never returns home.
Isn't buried
his bones? Right, he gets buried instead, right here in the backyard of the whoever this guy is in Israel. So everyone wants to figure out, who is this Navi? Who's the other Navi? Why the punishment so bad? What's going on? And literally, everyone has an article. Everyone has written an article on this topic. So we'll see how many of the theories we can get through this week. If not, we'll continue with them next week. Okay, so let's take it theory by theory. So Rav Samet has a very, 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 very lengthy article.
Who is this?
Rav Elchanan Samet. He's one of the, like, the big Tanakh guys in Gush. He's excellent. You probably came across this stuff at some point.
You probably read my dad's stuff, but then from there he wrote a lengthy article.
Yeah,
probably.
He's great. So he has a very, very long article, and this is how he. I'm not going to go through every detail, but this is his basic theory. His basic, and Uriel Simon also has a theory that's very, very similar. He was, I don't know if he still is, he was the, like, head of Tanakh at Hebrew U for a long time. I mean, he's 88 now. I'm not sure he's still active. I don't think so. I think he hasn't been in.
This
son ran with me. Okay. So, I mean, I assume he was a smart guy.
Very.
Doesn't surprise me. Okay, so they both have very, very similar theories. And they say as follows. Okay. Let's set up the background here. Yeravam sets up an alternate worship to Yerushalayim. Now, this has got to be confusing to everybody. Because, as Charlie has pointed out, the shock that everyone must be feeling is, wait a second, Yeravam was picked by God just now. Maybe what he's doing is legitimate. Like, everyone is looking, and they want guidance, and they're probably a bit confused what's going on. So Hashem wants to set the record straight. So what does he do? The first time that there is a the first time that there is a public gathering
of his worship,
he sends a Navi from Yehuda. And he comes and he says, one day there's going to be a descendant of the king, of David, of Shlomo, of Rechavam, whatever, who is going to destroy this. Now, you might think, like, big deal. Okay, like, you know, it's a few hundred years from now. But what's really happening is this is the first public display of the new religious world, which, again, people assume that at some level has the authority of God because Yeravam had been appointed by God. And instead, this Navi shows up and he says, no, it's not true. This is going to end. This kingdom is not going to exist in perpetuity. He is a sinner. This is illegitimate. And God gives him a few instructions. And he said, here's what I want you to tell them. I want you to tell them, first of all, that they're illegitimate. And one day, they will be undone by a melech from Beit David. It doesn't matter that it's not going to happen now. But they should know that. And then I'm going to give you an oath. And that is, break the Mizbeach. The Mizbeach will magically be broken, and people will know that you are a prophet through a mofet. Yeravam understands the danger that this poses to his kingdom. If people believe the Navi, remember his fear, as we saw at the end of the last parak, was that people will go back to Yerushalayim. If they believe the Navi, they'll go back to Yerushalayim. And as he knows, going back to Yerushalayim is synonymous with them accepting Malchut Beit David again, or potentially. So he understands the danger of people believing that he's a Navi. So he says, seize him. But then his arms, you know, locks up. And then he can't draw it back. So, like I said, if I were me at this point, I'd be wondering, well, maybe God isn't on my side anymore. But he doesn't do that. So instead, he says to Yeravam, so Yeravam says to him, why don't you come to my house? Now, why does that help? And why did God specifically tell him, don't go to his house? And
legitimate, otherwise it'll...
Right, so one possibility is that it'll legitimate him. Now, Neely Semet, I'm not sure if it's her son's wife, daughter-in-law, I'm not sure, but she has an article and she notes that if you look through Tanakh, eating at the house of a king, like we saw this at the beginning of the parak, when David told Shlomo, make sure that Barzillai Giladi, who was good to me, is always Miochei Shulchanecha. It means that the king is your patron. So it's not just legitimation. He's saying, look, you want to be a prophet? You can be a prophet. Be my prophet. Right? Because there were a lot of false prophets. We know this. You go through all of Tanakh, there were a lot of prophets who weren't real. Right? They were politicians. They were the religious stamp of approval. And they said whatever the king wanted them to say. So his first track is, you know what? Kill him. That doesn't work. He realizes he's a real Navi. So he said, okay, instead, let me bribe him. And then he tells him, look, you can't bribe me. God specifically told me, I can't eat here. I can't eat here because you know, as Neely Simon puts it, you can't be my patron. That'll undermine everything I'm doing. So up till now, and then why can't I return on the path that I came? Because there are different versions of this, but basically, either it means there's no going back, you know, symbolically, or, you know, it means that, you know, this place is going to be destroyed, right? Once I've walked through it, like, I'm never coming back, right? There's only one direction. It's down, right? I'm not going to retrace my steps. And also, retracing your steps may be an indication of a possibility of a change of mind. But if you go in only one direction, right, it's, right, I'm not going in and out. I come once, you know, this is your chance. If not, I'm out. I'm not retracing what I said. There's no undoing it. So he tells him, look, there's no undoing what I just said. You're going to be destroyed. And I'm not coming. You're not supporting me. So he goes. So then Rav Samet says, so what happened? There's an old Navi. Now this Navi, he suggests, is part of Yeravam's political house. Right? He's well experienced with being, you know, he's the type of Navi that Yeravam wants. Someone who just says whatever he's supposed to. He's a cynical, fake Navi. And he hears. Now, Yeravam, he wants religious support, but Inde is a politician. But the people who are part of the religious political group, they really don't want anybody to believe the new Navi. So this Navi hears. Now, why wasn't, if he's such an old Navi and important, why doesn't he show up to Beit El? So maybe just because he's too old, right? It says he's an old Navi. Maybe he just couldn't make it or whatever it is. He's already established. But he hears that about this Nevuah, and he panics. He tells his sons, which way did he go? So they say, that way, and he runs to him. And then he says, are you the Navi? He said, yeah. He said, come eat with me. Now, Rav Samet said what he probably thinks is, he's a fake Navi. He's been a political lackey for years. So he assumes that the guy coming from the north is the same thing. Right? So he says, come. Come to me. But what is the Navi here, the real Navi? So he assumes that the real Navi, you know, when God told him don't eat there, it could mean don't eat in Yisrael. It could also mean don't eat by the king. Right. And he said he was, you know, he should have checked with God, but he was hesitant. He didn't really want to believe that the Jews were lost. And when he heard, you know what, you can come back, he said, first of all, maybe it was only supposed to be by the king. Or he said, you know what, maybe God, it isn't so permanent. God said, I can't turn back because there's no hope for the Jews. Maybe he changed his mind. He was almost too optimistic. He was just waiting for the Navi to tell him this. So he said, you know what, you know, he just believed it. And then, you know, maybe not, right? You know, so is it because he's too optimistic? That's Rav Samet's approach, or Simon doesn't. Maybe he just thought that the interpretation was that he got it wrong, that it meant only don't eat with Yeravam and not eat with him, whatever it is.
That's not what it says here.
Well,
this doesn't make sense because it doesn't say don't eat with Yeravam. It said,
oh, correct. I mean, it's wrong. It's wrong. It's clearly wrong, right? So it's not totally clear what his mistake is, right? But he clearly makes a mistake. He assumes that this Navi is a real Navi, and he's telling him the truth. So he comes back to him. And then God says, you know, it's time to, you're going to die. Now, why so harsh? So Rav Samet said, look, it's true. The guy made a minor mistake. The problem is that everything, his message hangs on everybody believing his message. If he reneges or, you know, in any way, shape, or form, it calls into question the whole mission. And as Chazal like emphasizing,
the mission already happened.
What?
The Nevuah was anyways not true.
Well,
it says your Mizbech is going to be
broken. It did. It did.
But it happened already now.
No. Sorry. No, he said the Mizbeach will be broken now, and the bones will be burnt in the time of Yoshio. The Mizbeach will be now. So that already happened. But, you know, his message is...
That's a little bit.
So, I mean, it says... Well, it's clear from context that that's his mofate, right? So that's... I also mean it's the first time. But no, it's his mofate. That's what he's going to do now, right? He's going to break the Mizbech now, and then Yoshiyahu will do the final, you know, one day, 16 generations from now. But it's not just that his message has to come true, it's that it has to be clear that this is permanent. Like, there is no turning back. Like, and everything hangs on people believing that message. Now, Chazal like talking about this, that Echad Mezid Vechad Shogig B'Chil Hashem. That B'Chil Hashem, it doesn't matter whether you do it on purpose or not. Because if the message that's going to be sent is wrong, you've got to fix it. Now, this Navi, if he doesn't die now, right, and he didn't just need to turn back. Where Samet argues is he ate dinner with a representative of the idolatrous prophetic club. That he may not have realized it. He wasn't a he wasn't patronized by Ravam. But the fact is, if everybody else realized it, so then the message is now, right? The message is now called into question. So now God, for a moment, says, you know, changes and actually gives Nevuah to the fourth Navi and says, tell him he's going to die. So he does. Now the guy feels bad because it's his fault. Right, and now he's started to have a change of heart because he, you know, he just got real nevuah. So he saddles the donkey for the Ish Elokim because he's like, well, that was my fault. So he that's a minor whatever.
It's the last week.
Exactly. So he sets out and he gets killed by the lion. And it's very clear that it's an act of God. Right, the lion is standing there over him. It's not eating the donkey. He doesn't eat the person. Right, he just kills him and just sits. And then people, the Navi, the false Navi, hears about it. And what does he do? So now he has a choice. And this is where Rav Samet, right? Rav Samet says, we said it wasn't fair, right? That he gets buried, he gets saved. But he said, think about it from his perspective. He has a choice. Nobody knew that he had a Nevuah. He's the only person, the only people who knew were him and the Navi who's now dead. His political career hangs on him being a false prophet. A prophet of Yeravam. He has a choice. He can now say nothing, right? Or even better, he can say, the guy was killed because he went against Yeravam. He can say whatever he wants. He's the only one who knows the truth. And instead, he puts his political, right, his religious political career, he throws it in the garbage. And he says, it happened because he's right. Right, because his message was correct, and God punished him because he was supposed to make it clear that his decree was final, and he didn't. He turned back and he ate by me. And what does he do? He says to his sons, "Bury me with his bones because I want to save my bones." So Rav Samet said, "Is that chote niskar? Right, the sinner is benefiting." He said, "No, by him telling his sons publicly." Yeah, it's tshuva. He's telling him he's right. Yoshiyahu is going to one day come and burn the bones of the Nevi'ei HaBaal, meaning all of my friends. And I want to throw my lot in with him, meaning he is right, and everything he said is going to happen. And he turns coat, and he said, that's it? So he said, it's not chotei niskar. This is an act of tshuva.
Yeah, tshuva. Right? Should have thought about it.
For sure. For sure. And he said... And okay. And then he says, he ends the, and then he ends it, and he says, the last psukim were, after this, Yeravam didn't do tshuva. He said, what does that imply?
That he did.
That he should have. No, not that he should have, but he should have. He said, what, right? If he says he didn't do tshuva, that implies he should have. He said, why should he have? Because he said, not only did the prophet just come, but his own religious establishment
told him,
you know what? It's all a lie. So this is Rav Samet's analysis. And you read it through and you're like, wow, that's very compelling. Then there was a response. Right? I think we have time for at least one of the responses by Tamar Verdiger, who said, this is a very nice theory, but it's wrong. It's 100% wrong, and I'll prove it to you. Because what does Rav Samet say? There was a Navi Sheker whose whole life was built on lies. What whole life? This is the first worship of Yeravam. What are you talking about? There is no such person who built his religious career on lying to Yeravam. This is the first time that anyone has ever showed up for Yeravam. That's the whole point.
He could have been a Navi Sheker before.
He could have been a Navi Sheker before, but to who? Right?
It doesn't matter to who.
Correct. But he's not part of Yeravam's religious establishment. Right, Rusamit's. No, that's Rusamit. Right, she said to Rusamit. She said, "What do you mean?" Right, Rusamit's whole claim is that the guy was a representative of Yeravam's religious establishment. He's an old Navi, right? It sounds like he's been a Navi for years. Said to who?
How old was Yeravam?
What? That's not the point. Is that until now he just built the Egel? Right, this is a few weeks.
He could have been an old Navi that joined Yeravam when he became king.
Correct. So he could be a real Navi who's a turncoat, but it's clearly not someone who built his whole career on Navi Sheker, because until now, everyone, including Yeravam, was in Yerushalayim. Right? This is the first month. It's been 30 days since he rebelled, basically. Right? Because Yeravam said, I don't want people to go for Sukkis to the Beit HaMikdash, so he makes his own Sukkis a month later. It's 30 days. Rav Samet's whole idea that this guy built his whole political career. He built his whole political career in the last 60 days? Like what? 90 days? How long has this been, Sach HaKol? Like, who is this person? Until now, there was no politicized Navi Sheker. Because Yeravam himself only rebelled against God this month. Like, what is she talking about? So she says, nah, you totally messed up. You totally don't get it. He isn't a Navi Sheker. He's a Navi Emet. He is a real Navi. And so she takes this, and Alex Israel takes it and said, totally different explanation. Throw all that in the garbage. Forget it. Right? And this is why I said, everyone has something on this, but they're all radically different. She says, nah, what are you talking about? This is the story. Yeravam shows, right? The guy shows up. It's the beginning of his religious thing. And everyone's sitting there. Is it right? Is it not right? Is it right? Is it not right? I don't know. He shows up, and he says, fake, false, and everyone says, he's from Yehuda, of course he's saying that, right? He's the first religious, right? So no one believes him. And then there's a real Navi. He's an old Navi. He's been a Navi for years. Why doesn't he show up in Beit El? Because he doesn't know what to do. Because he's stuck in a real situation. On the one hand, he's like, Yeravam seems to be an idolater. On the other hand, didn't God just appoint him? Like, he was appointed by a Navi, just like, 3 weeks ago. Like, whatever. A few weeks ago. And didn't a Navi just come to Rehavam and tell him, don't fight because Yeravam's legitimate king? Maybe I'm missing something. Maybe Yeravam isn't an idolater. Maybe Hashem wants these other batei, a second avenue of worship for him. I just sort of don't know. And we're gonna go through multiple theories. Don't worry, we're not done yet.
No, but the fact that he institutes a new holiday, everybody who reads the Torah knows that there is no way that it's going to be an additional holiday.
So that's why some of the Farshim say, when you say it's the eighth month, there's two ways of saying that. Either he makes a parallel Sukkis, or...
There's no parallel Sukkis.
Or he makes a leap year, in which case it is Sukkis,
no,
right?
It's still the seventh year. It's still the seventh
month. Because if you make a leap year, then you call it, you say this is the seventh month, and the 15th, it's Sukkis. And it's just that in Yehuda, they're celebrating it as the eighth month, because they don't have a leap year. Right? So some of the Farshim say maybe it's, he's just telling them this is Sukkis. No. My Sanhedrin said that we have a leap year. If we have a leap year, then this is the seventh month, not the eighth. And the Torah is just telling you, by the way, it really is the eighth month, meaning Yeravam wasn't allowed to make a leap year. Right? So he could be passing this off as Sukkis. Right? Again, you don't have to buy this, but it's sort of outlining the theory. So Alex Israel and Tamar Verdiger and others say, you know what? He's a real Navi. And what is Yeravam doing? He made a leap year. He makes it look like it's really Sukkis. And this isn't real Avodah Zarah. Right? Again, this is predicated in the notion it's not real Avodah Zarah. It's, it's a second symbolized of God. It's not real Avodah Zarah. He's worshiping God, but through a different temple. So there are people who are just confused. And then this guy shows up from Yehuda. And he performs miracles. And he's on his way home. And the sons run home to their father, who's an old Navi, who's stuck at home not knowing what to do. And they said, hey, there's a Navi. And he just did this. And he said, hey, it's a chance to clarify. Maybe he knows. He clearly knows what's going on. So he runs after him. And he says, come home to eat. And the guy says to him, I can't. God told me not to eat. So we know he lies. He's clearly, he lies. The Abarmanel says, why did he lie? He wasn't lying. He told him that God told me to come to eat because there's a mitzvah zachnasas orchem. Like, he legitimately said, like, he didn't mean, like, God told me in a prophecy. He meant, like, it's the right thing to do, or it was a white lie. He's like, look, the guy's, he's pushed hungry. Like, he just, he needs something to eat. So I'll tell him that God said he'll come if he didn't realize what was at stake. He was a real Navi. He wanted a chance to talk. He didn't realize what was at stake, so he calls him home. And the other Navi, you know, for whatever reason, he's gullible. He, the guy's sincere. Maybe he even knew that the guy used to be a Navi, right? So he shouldn't have been tricked, but he did. So he went home. Why does he then get the nevuah? Not because, you know, oh, God chose to give a false Navi nevuah. Because he was a Navi in the past. He made a mistake. He lied. It was wrong. But he's a real Navi, and he turns to the guy and said, look, I didn't realize what was at stake here. Right? I didn't realize what was at stake.
He lied and just gets another... So God likes him so much, he gives him another nevuah. He just make a big mix. He lied, and he just gets another nevuah.
So...
Again. He is lying at the other guy.
So we'll get more serious. One second. So we'll get more. Right. So he says to him. So he goes out. He gets killed. And then the Navi feels really bad. You know, oh, my white lie. You know, that didn't turn out so well for him. But in the meantime, he's mostly been a Navi. And he said, you know what? I know his nevuah is going to come true. Bury me with him because he knows it's all going to be true. That's basically their theory, right? That he wanted to test out the new religious thing, the new religious movement, and he made a big mistake. And again, it looks really bad, so he gets killed because, you know, look, he didn't listen to God, and that's really bad. And then why does Yeravam not do tshuva? Because the Navi turned back. Because he said, right, because as we said, not turning back is a symbol that there's no, this can't be reversed. And then, well, he did turn back. Oh, so maybe it can be reversed, and that's it, right? That's sort of theory two, again, with different versions. Theory three, right? This.
Which one do you like?
So this I actually had never seen. This was a fascinating piece. Maybe you'll like this one. It's cynical. So there's. I think she's Christian. She wrote in one of these Catholic Bible journals or something. Pamela Reese, and she said, "I don't get what everyone's talking about. They're totally missing the whole story." She said the key to the whole story is found in Rashi. Not here, but in Parshat Balak. She said, I think she's Christian, but she said, it's Rashi. She said, look at this. This story is identical. Is mamash identical to Bilam? Right? Rabbi Angel also places that. It's Bilam, right? A Navi who goes, and, you know, everything. The donkey, right? The saddling of the camel, right? The emphasis on the saddling of the donkey is going to a king, negotiating with a king, right? Who's trying to have a new religious service to get power, you know, over sort of the Jews. Right? Everything here is like, you know, the magic, you know, killing of the, you know, in the Bilam story, you have, I would have killed you and let the donkey live. So here, he kills the person, the donkey lives. Like everything, right? The Malach had said that I'm going to kill the donkey, I'm going to kill you, and I'm going to let the donkey live. I didn't do it, but here that's actually what they do. The person who doesn't listen to God gets killed. Right? Angel also points his head. Right? Angel just said, look, this story is sort of like Bilam to teach you that even when Nevi'im make mistakes, God, in the end of the day, will always get his will. Right? Always get his way. Right? Doesn't matter what the Navi does, doesn't matter what you do, God will always get his way. Right? That's sort of the message he derives from this. But Pamela Reese said, wait a second. Rashi says something very simple. Balak says to Bilam, come curse the Jews. And he says, I can't. Because God told me not to. And even if you give me a house full of gold and silver, I won't come. And then, what does Balak do? He sends more messengers. So Rashi says, why did he send more messengers? Didn't Balak already tell him? Bill Murray tell him that he's not going to come? And Rashi says, no. Don't listen to the words he said. Listen to what he said. If someone just says, I can't, God said no, he means it. But when someone says, if you gave me $1 million, I wouldn't do it.
But what's he? $2 million.
Right? That means he's thinking money. So Rashi said, that's what he meant. Right? And Balak read through read in between the lines and said, oh, a house full of gold and silver won't be enough, but maybe more will. So he sends him more chashuv messengers, and he offers him more. That's exactly what he tells him. Right? Rashi says that whenever somebody says, no matter the right, no matter how much you pay me, I won't do it, what they're saying is
pay me more.
Pay me more. Right? So she says, she has
but
an article.
God told him you can go.
What?
God
so in the end, right, in the end, right, so without the continuation of the story, but she picks up on that one Rashi, and she said, she calls the article Vindicating God, right? She said, wait a second, take that Rashi. She said, I don't know why Rashi doesn't say it here, but what happened? She said, what happened? Yeravam, he comes to Yeravam and says, there is no hope for you. And Yeravam says to him, as soon as he stops with the miracle, Yeravam says, come have dinner. Right? And we already said from Neely Samet, that means, come, I'll be your patron. And he says, oh, I wouldn't do that even if you gave me half of your kingdom. It's clear what the conversation is that's going on. He's saying, I see that you're a real Nafi, but I could pay you off, right? And he says, no, you don't have enough money to pay me off, right? What does that mean? Maybe you do, right? Once you, if your response is, come, I'm going to pay you off, and your response is, you know, not for $1 million, the implication is for $2 million I will. He said, he may have been a Navi, but he was a Navi like Bullock was a Navi, right? As soon as money was mentioned, you know, he wasn't so, you know, convinced. And he storms away, right? Another prophet comes and says, oh, I know this type of person. I get you. And he comes to him and says, come, meet by me. He said, I can't. God told me. He said, no. Anida vi kamocha. I'm just like you. I know what you want, right? Come meet by me. It'll be mistader. We'll work it out. It'll be okay. And the guy says, oh, he understands my language. Let's go negotiate, right? And then he gets to the guy's house, and God said, oh God, right, really, I got to go through this. So then he sends a nevuah to the Navi and says, tell him, right, that it's not happening, right? You need somebody. The donkey can talk to Bilam. Right? He said, you want to understand the story? Look at the Bilam story. In the Bilam story, the donkey talked. So here, it was a fake Navi who talked. Said he had to tell him, that was, right, you totally, I know, right, God's like, okay, I sent you to be a real Navi. And you are ready to sell out. You are done. Then she says, you know what? I mean, it is sort of true that this Navi gets off easy. It's true. The Navi gets off easy. He does, right? Okay, in my last out. He gets off easy, right? The fake Navi. But she said, you know why? Because we read the story. She said, if you just follow the punishments, you would be shocked unless you read it her way. She said, in her reading, the real criminal is the real Navi. He's a real Navi who was fetching a higher price. The other guy, he wasn't a real Navi to begin with. He wasn't a turncoat from God. Okay, he lied. What do you expect from the guy, right? He's a religious fraud anyways. So he ends up benefiting from this guy. And yeah, he ends up benefiting. But she said, you gotta vindicate God. It's clear that this guy is a fake Navi. He's a real Navi who turned cold. That's why God's so angry. That's why God rips him apart. And you know why Yeravim doesn't do tshuva? Of course he doesn't do tshuva. Because if the guy was nice and religious, so he would have said, oh, maybe the guy's telling the truth. But as soon as he tested the waters and he said, can I pay you? He's like, how much? Right? So Yeravam's like, I know these types. This wasn't a real prophecy. You're a good actor, right? You can perform some miracles. You're trying to undermine my kingdom because you want to extort. You're an extortionist. You want money from me. As soon as he heard the words, no, not half the kingdom, he's like, he just wants a higher price. Oh, just go home. Just go home. This is fake. I don't need to buy you off. Just get out of here. Of course Yeravam didn't do tshuva, right? The guy undermined his own nevuah. That's why God was so angry. Right? So she calls this article Vindicating God, which, I'll be honest, I don't know why nobody said it. I don't know if it's right. You know, I was like, I don't know why nobody said it, but like, she's right, that if you read Rashi in Balak and you just apply it here, the parallel between the stories is scary. And Rashi's comment, if you borrow Rashi's comment, then this is just like Balak. It's a guy who pretends to be all from and say, oh, I can't go against God. And all he's doing is waiting for a high enough bid to do just that. And as soon as the Navi comes and said, come home with me. It'll be okay. Right, he turns back and everything is undone. So those are three theories on this story, right? There's Ur-Samit who says, real sincere Navi versus establishment of Yeravam, who's trying to undermine the Navi. The sin isn't willing, it's Chilul Hashem. And the second Navi, the reason he gets rewarded is because his admission that the first Navi is true is the greatest act of tshuva. Then there's Tamar Verdigar and Alex Israel, who's saying, no, doesn't make any sense. Right? These are two real Nevi'im, one from Yehuda and one from Yisrael. The one from Yisrael is trying to figure out, is Yeravam real or not? And this was their chance to find out. But in the end of the day, you know, he was just trying to find out. The first Navi really undermined his mission by turning back and by showing patronage to Yeravam. And that's why he doesn't do tshuva. And then Pamela Rees, who just said, no, just look at Rashi and Balak. The real Navi, he may have been a Navi, just like Balak was a Navi, but he was someone who was ready to be a turncoat. And that's why God gets so angry. The second Navi is a fraud, but okay, whatever. So he ends up being rewarded. He ends up saving his bones. Okay, I mean, you know, big deal, right? I mean, it's not such a big deal. 16 generations later anyways, right?
Did it happen, really?
What? Yes, it does happen. It happens when we get to Yoshiyahu. You see the story. Yoshiyahu actually does fulfill this. It's one of those times. She actually thinks, this is a bit weird, right? She says that Yoshiyahu doesn't... Yoshiyahu, like, you know, has heard stories of this, you know, 16 generations ago, and he doesn't quite understand what was going on. So he didn't realize, like, the ins and outs of the second Navi being fake also. Like, he just didn't quite understand the whole thing. So she ignores what Yoshiyahu actually says. Because Yoshiyahu says it was one real Navi, right? And focuses on him. She's like, okay, whatever. Maybe he doesn't really quite know the history, but whatever's going on, that's a bit murky, her theory. But her basic theory is that, you know, that's really what's really going on is you have a cynical Navi, right, who's ready to turn coat just like Balak. Which, I get, you know, you read it and you're just like, it really works very well with Rashi and with the Balak story. So those are three sort of radical theories. But you can see why this parak is so bizarre that everybody has to get in on the game and try to understand what's going on. But the upshot of it is that by the end, for whatever reason, Yeravam doesn't do tshuva, for any of the reasons we listed above, which brings us to the next parak when we meet Yeravam's son, son Aviah. Okay, so that is this parak. Like I said, I've been